Good day, everyone. Welcome back to Dreams Warp, the podcast designed to awaken you to a new reality. For today's episode, you know what day it is. It's Sunday, and that means it's time for our Zen stream. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. Hey all, before we get into this, I just need to allow a quick word from a sponsor. Thanks for your patience. All right, let's go ahead and get into this. My name is George, and if this is your first time here, first I want to say thank you for checking out the podcast. The purpose of this podcast is to explore the mind and the depths of consciousness that create it. Ultimately, the podcast is here to help you gain a sense of mastery over your reality and your life through mastery of the mind. So if that's something that interests you, you have definitely come to the right place. And I'd like to say that if you find the content of this podcast helpful, I hope that you will consider sharing it with others. That's a great way to support the podcast. So we have two series here on the podcast. We have our Tuesday Taoism. We have our Zen stream on Sunday. And then I do try to throw in an extra episode here and there whenever possible, usually related a topic related to mental health. That is my professional background. I've been a psychotherapist now for about 16 years. So you'll hear about topics like mental health, mental illness, relationships, dealing with difficult emotions, goal setting, mindfulness, meditation, basically anything and everything that helps you reach your goals, achieve your dreams, just live an overall happier day-to-day life. So again, if you're new, welcome, and thanks for checking it out. Now, today, being Sunday, we are doing our Zen stream. And again, for those of you that are new, Zen Buddhism happens to be my kind of like the foundation of that I hang everything else off of, including my work as a psychotherapist and work sometimes in manifesting. You know, that's just basically the bedrock of my practice. But as I always say, I am not here to convert anyone to Zen Buddhism. You have to find your own path. It just so happens that the path sort of outlined in Zen Buddhism happened to be the one that I really resonate with and that I follow. So today for our Zen stream, I'm returning back to this great book written by Thich Nhat Hanh, a pretty well-known Vietnamese Zen monk. He wrote this book called Your True Home, and it's basically a collection of 365 very short meditations, short readings. And I found a nice one today that I think paints a really, really good picture of really, I mean, I guess I'll read it, and then as we discuss it, it'll become clear. But it encapsulates stuff so well about the nature of our life, the nature of our existence, the nature of our reality, and it's just very, very well done. So I'm gonna read this to you, and then I'll discuss it a little bit. Hopefully, get something useful out of this for our practice today. So this chapter is called Tasting True Liberation. Everyone we cherish will someday get sick and die. If we do not practice the meditation on emptiness when those things happen, we will be overwhelmed. Concentration on emptiness is a way of staying in touch with life as it is, but it has to be practiced and not just talked about. We observe our body and see all the causes and conditions that have brought it to be. Our parents, our country, the air, and even future generations. We go beyond time and space, me and mind, and mine, and taste true liberation. If we only study emptiness as a philosophy, it will not be a door of liberation. Emptiness is a door of liberation when we penetrate it deeply, and we realize interdependent co-arising and the interbeing nature of everything that is. That's the end of the reading. So this kind of connects back to one of the fundamental truths, the Four Noble Truths, first shared by Shakyamuni Buddha, the original Buddha, Siddhartha Gautama. And he basically talks about the suffering of death. There's four sufferings, four noble truths, or I have to refresh my memory actually on this, but I know one of them is old age, sickness, death. You know, those are the major ones, and I know there's one more. But anyway, he's talking here obviously about sickness and death, and we all come to the point in our lives where we will experience sickness and death, either ourselves or someone close to us that we love. But really, that is only the most obvious thing that he is referring to here, because the truth is that everything is living, or another word for that is existing, in a way that we can experience it through these bodies, through these brains. It arises for a certain period of time, and then it falls away, it dies, right? And this applies not only to people who are alive, including ourselves, but it also applies to things that come into our temporary existence. It applies to ideas even that come into our temporary existence. So everything, even thoughts that you have in your mind, emotions that you experience, everything basically is following this same pattern of life and death. As a matter of fact, there is a very good book called The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying that talks a lot about this. So if you haven't read it, it's rather dense, okay? It's not an easy read, and it's a big book, but it's very good. It's a very good book if you want to read more about this kind of thing. But what we see here is this sort of overarching pattern of things. Almost, I tend to visualize it in my mind as the rising and falling of waves on the ocean. That's a metaphor that I've used before. It's a metaphor that other people have used as well, and I think it serves as perfect. It's interesting how I love being out at sea, cruising, being on boats. I just love the water. I love ocean. It's kind of funny because and I'm not a huge like horoscope person, but my both all of my sun sign, my rising, and my moon sign are all water, so it's triple water. So I just tend to have a strong connection to the water. I grew up in a place in South Florida where the ocean was always around, so I feel like I just have a very strong connection to the ocean, and I always feel very peaceful around the ocean. I love being on a ship and just watching the water. I could do that for hours on end, just watching the waves rise and fall. And watching those ra waves rise and fall is very similar, is a perfect metaphor actually for what he's talking about in this short little chapter, how things come into existence for a period of time, like a wave appear, and then the wave dissolves into other waves, and so on the cycle goes. So everything that arises, as he says in this little chapter, is connected to things that have risen in, from our perspective, in our past. So he mentions your parents, your country, the air. He even says it's all connected. So what's interesting to me here is what happens, and I think I've discussed this before, but it's been a little while. I think it's a side effect of how our brains operate and how our brains are shaped to perceive the nature of our reality is that we do not get this wide view, this macro view of our existence, right? We, because of our limited perspective and how small we are basically, it's almost like we're a tiny speck in the ocean. So when we look around us, a temporary wave that appears from our perspective, in many cases, it appears to have its own independent reality. It's challenging for us to see how it's connected to everything else. And again, that's a byproduct of our perspective. Interestingly, and I just want to connect this to another little reading from this book. And this one is so short, it's literally one sentence. This other meditation, and I want to use it here to kind of go a little bit further into this and really look at what we're talking about. So this little chapter is called The External World, which I love. I love that title. And the one sentence basically says, every object of the mind is itself mind. Every object of the mind is itself mind. Now, this also connects to something Shakyamuni Buddha said, the first Buddha, and I always paraphrase this one because I garble it up. But basically, what he says is that everything that you perceive as being outside of you, external to you, is mind itself, right? He had a very subjective perspective on things. And it's very interesting how, when you look at very modern science, some of the theories on physics, it's actually shown that our subjective perception of things affects the outcome of experiments. And you've probably heard that before. It's pretty common knowledge nowadays, if you're into this kind of stuff. So subjectivity always trumps objectivity, right? It's really kind of impossible for us to have a purely objective perspective on anything because we are always perceiving it from our own biases, our own experience, and our own, most importantly, limited perspective. Again, we're so small, right? If you could, I imagine, if you could picture yourself almost having like a godlike omniscience, right, where you can see everything at once, the whole universe all at once. I would imagine that you see it all as one living kind of energy, like, let's say, a star, right? It's massive. It's all just one energy. But as you zoom in closer and closer and closer and closer and closer, and you come down almost to the microscopic level, which from that perspective would be maybe our unique perspective, our unique subjective reality, then things appear very different, right? We don't see one large star or one large universal energy. We see our individual kind of perspective. So everything appears different. Everything appears more solid. Everything appears more real. And of course, because as a result of that experience, right, we tend to see ourselves as also separate things, right? We form a mental concept of who we are, and we fill that concept with opinions, with judgments, with our own history, with our own quote-unquote personality, with our own pattern. And then, as Eckhart Tolle says in his book, we mistake that entity that we create for who we really are. And as he's saying here so clearly in the first chapter that I read, is that we have to take time to meditate, or as he says, penetrate deeply this idea of emptiness. Now, we use the word emptiness, but I think that a lot of times when people hear that, they kind of it brings up a connotation that doesn't exactly capture, I think, what he's really talking about when he says emptiness. The truth is that when we use the word emptiness in Zen Buddhism or Buddhism, many branches of Buddhism, it's really talking about the fact that there is no independent thing that exists outside of everything else. It's all, as I've said before, long string of causes and effects, causes and effects, causes and effects. This just universal constant movement where things rise like the ocean. The waves rise, we rise, thoughts arise, emotions arise, experiences arise, but there is no wave that exists that is disconnected from the ocean. You can't really point at a wave and say, oh, look, 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 that's something that is totally its own existence, right? You don't give the wave a name, give it a history, give it a personality, and say, you could mentally say, well, this wave's bigger than this one. I like this wave better. Oh, well, God, I hope this wave never leaves me. And then, but you see from that perspective that sort of attachment or that clinging doesn't really make much sense in the context of the whole ocean. Now, let me pause here for just a sec because we also have to talk about the flip side of this, which is not using this kind of perspective to deny our own emotions. So let me just pause here for a second, allow a word from a sponsor, and I'll be right back. All right, everyone, thanks for your patience. I am back. Let me take a quick moment here, remind you that if you ever want to reach out to me with a question, or if you have a suggestion, you want to express a concern, or if you have an idea for a future podcast episode, feel free to email me at elucidatethereal@gmail.com. You can also hop on over to my YouTube channel, Dreams Warp, same name. Find any one of my videos, doesn't matter which one. Post a comment under it. I get notified right away and I can respond to you there in the comment section of the YouTube video. I am on Twitter also. You can find me there, send me a direct message, and follow me while you're at it. I do post things there and retweet things there that I think serve as nice little reminders throughout the day of our practice. And finally, if you're enjoying this content and you're listening to it on Apple Podcasts, I hope you could take a moment and leave a nice rating and review. That really helps me, helps the podcast. So thank you for that. All right. So we've been talking about this chapter, Thich Nhat Hanh, Your True Home, Tasting True Liberation. And again, he's talking about these two, I wouldn't say opposing, but two points of view, right? Our limited subjective point of view, which is our day-to-day reality, in which, as he says here in this chapter, you experience loss, you experience suffering, you experience, I guess more attachment to things that appear, right? And when they dissolve away, or appear to dissolve away, it can cause a lot of distress, a lot of suffering. That's one perspective. The other perspective is this quote-unquote tasting true liberation, which is, again, looking at at the nature of our existence, to use the metaphor, almost like an ocean, where each thing that arises is simply a wave, but it's all connected to the same ocean. And as one wave rises, another wave falls, and every wave impacts every other one. So you get this long, long, long tapestry. I almost see it as this vast tapestry, like I've said, as of cause and effect interweaving together. And from our limited perspective, we are almost at the crossroads of different causes and effects, and they appear so large and so significant and so important. And we many times, because of the nature of our perspective, the nature of our perception, the nature of our brains and how they work, we tend to attach a great amount of significance to each individual wave. And I want to really kind of present a different perspective here, something that I think balances out things a little bit, because here's my concern. Maybe somebody hears this kind of talk and it's very easy to jump to a conclusion to say, oh, well, so basically what you're saying is that if someone that I love dies, it's no big deal because, you know, whatever, they're just a wave, right? They're connected to the ocean. So, you know, so don't worry about it. You know, you don't have to suffer. That's extreme. Okay. That's not the aim of what I'm talking about here. Okay. I do believe that we have come into this perspective or this subjective reality for a purpose, and we could debate the purpose of to no end, right? I mean, that's a purely philosophical debate, and everybody's got a different opinion, possibly, and I'm not saying my opinion is right, yours is wrong, but I do believe that there is a certain amount of value to fully cherishing your human experience. So, I think of my wife, I think of my son, right? And if I were to lose either one of them, I would probably experience tremendous, tremendous emotional pain. And I believe that experiencing that type of emotion fully is a way to honor my human experience. What I think this type of reading and this meditation on emptiness does, okay, is that it allows me to experience fully the emotions associated with loss. But again, I experience them, but I'm able to move through them. I'm not so inclined or so likely to get completely lost and, you know, suffer for the rest of my life. because of the attachment to this loss. Now, of course, you could argue, well, you haven't really experienced that, so you don't really know. And that's true. I would say that that's a valid argument. But I've had plenty of suffering in my life, you know, including the loss of my father, including, you know, major things that I've struggled with myself. And I can tell you, sitting here right now, I feel that I have fully dealt with the emotions arising from those experiences, and yet I'm a very joyful person today. I'm a very grateful person, grateful for my life, grateful for every moment that I get to experience living. So what we want to do here, okay, is we want to be able to have times in our life where we are fully immersed in this human experience. So that means being able to express love to those we care about, cherish each and every wave, using the metaphor, every wave that appears, cherish it. Because the truth is that every wave is not separate from the totality of this amazing universe. So by cherishing each individual wave, you are also honoring the totality of our universal consciousness. So it's a matter of, and I think this is a very, to me, it's a very kind of Zen approach, is that you're not really attaching to either perspective. You're not saying, oh, well, only universal consciousness is true and each individual wave, it's not that important. You're not attaching to that argument. But you're also not attaching to the opposite one where you're saying, oh, each individual wave is super important and I'm super attached and I can't lose any individual wave because it's just going to be devastating to me. You're not attaching to that either. You're actually able to freely move between the two. And that is really, I think, one of the ways, because there's many, one of the ways you could kind of describe a Zen approach to moment-to-moment reality is that you are able to fully embrace each and every moment. You are able to enter the experience, I guess, so to speak. But then you are also able to release it very quickly. And you're able to, your mind does not get caught on any specific thing and it doesn't attach very strongly to any specific thing, but it still experiences each and everything fully. And there's a difference. There's a difference between experiencing something fully and attaching to that thing, whatever it might be. You know, I said here, I think it was the last Zen stream or I don't know, a pretty recent episode, is that some people even attach very strongly to the idea of enlightenment. Some people attach very fiercely to some maybe experience they had after a long meditation session, right? They're like, oh, yes, I had this amazing insight. Now my whole life is going to be different. And I can tell you from personal experience, that is not usually the case, right? You kind of have this temporary elation, and then old mind or a conditioned mind starts to encapsulate that into an experience. It turns it into a concept, turns it into a memory, and it's not living anymore, right? You have now turned it into, you put it neat into a neat little box, and you filed it away in your mind. And it doesn't become a living reality that you can experience in each and every moment going forward. And this is why we must remain very fluid. That's a key word, is very fluid as we move through our moment-to-moment life. And I think that's one of the things that he's talking about in this little chapter of Tasting True Liberation, is he's pointing out the more fluid nature of our reality, how things, much like I've been talking about the ocean, rises and falls like a fluid, as opposed to perceiving our moment-to-moment reality as very solid, very, you know, kind of blocky and very, you know, with each thing kind of separate from everything else. And again, because of the way many of us were brought up, our cultural conditioning, things we learn from our parents, things we learn even from our own history books, we tend to kind of perceive the nature of our reality as these separate kind of individual things. And the truth is that when you take a much larger perspective, you begin to see this amazing tapestry of cause and effect, cause and effect, cause and effect, going from the beginning of what we can call time all the way up until this moment and continuing infinity into the future. And I've said here before, it has been a while, that even our perspective of time is simply a byproduct of the way that our brains work, you know. So, and this has always been a bit of a challenge to describe very clearly, but one of the ways that I've thought of describing it is, if you were to, you know, explore the Grand Canyon, which we all know is a vast, vast, vast area, if you were large enough, right, if you were literally, your size was large enough to be able to see every nook and cranny of the Grand Canyon at once, right, then you would be kind of omniscient within that, right, and it would take no time at all. You, literally in an instant, you see the whole thing. But because we are not that size, right? We have to go in there. If we wanted to see every nook and cranny, we'd have to go inch by inch by inch, looking through, looking through, looking through, looking through. And that would take who knows how long, right? Months, maybe years. And so our brains perceive the nature of reality in the same way. We cannot see the totality of our reality all at once. We have this limited little perspective, and we are basically looking at it little by little, piece by piece, piece by piece. And the byproduct of this is that our brain has to organize the experience, and that is how time is created. So it's really just a way of organizing our perspective is all that it really is. Everything is true. Everything is ultimately happening right now. Our experience of time is just a byproduct of our limited perception. So it's very important, like he says here, right? We could talk about this all day. It's a neat concept, but that's very different than truly practicing it, right? And I, you know, what a big advocate I am, for those of you who've been listening for a little while, to meditation. And meditation ultimately is what gives you a direct emotional experiential occurrence or sharing or understanding of this idea of emptiness, okay? This idea of the fluid nature of our reality. That's the only way to really, really turn it from just a mental concept, a discussion, turn that into a living, breathing reality. Where also Eckhart Tolle says in his book, where it becomes a self-evident reality, meaning you're not hearing it from someone else telling you, and you're like, yeah, I agree with that. That sounds cool. Whereas you are actually having a moment-to-moment experience where that truth that I'm talking about is self-evident to you. So that is a matter of practice, okay? So I like this reading. I think the way that he describes this is very, very good. I really liked it. I hope that you enjoyed it as well. I really want to thank you for listening. Stay tuned. I'll be back on Tuesday with another installment of Tuesday Taoism. And have a wonderful, wonderful rest of your day.